Welcome to the Pope's Point of View with your host, Elijah Burke.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to another edition of Pope's Point of View. I'm your host, Elijah Burke, and I'm joined by my co-host, Alakon Conman House. Today, folks, we're going to do something a little different. As you all know, we're going to address, focus, reflect on the Chris Benoit story. I did a poll across all social media platforms. Overwhelmingly, everyone voted for Pope to give his views and opinions on Chris Benoit. So that's kind of what we're going to do today. Not your normal 45 minutes of fire, but 45 minutes of information, unrestricted, unhinged, and unapologetic. So I want you guys to know that this episode, speaking for myself, of course, this will not be the celebrating of the tragic events that went down. However, there will be moments of reflections in which I will celebrate the individual that I knew being Chris Benoit. So with that being said, I'm going to go ahead and turn this over to my co-host, co-captain of this fantastic voyage, Conman. So Conman, you got the handles, man.
All right, Pope. I wanted to definitely let you get your first thoughts in there before we jumped into this very heavy and sensitive topic for you. And I know it's tough to speak on, but quite frankly, it's still a sensitive topic for me as a fan to talk about. So if you don't want to address it, then we can change it now. I'm sure your listeners would understand. So.
Yeah, we're going to go ahead and we're going to go through with one thing I know, Con, is that we'll get through this. Yeah. You'll get me through it, too. So I'm not worried about that. So let's do the do.
Well, let's go ahead and jump right into it. And the first question I wanted to ask you is, really, Pope, after 13 years of being silent about it, why now? Why here?
Well, Con, man, that's a good question. That's a question that I've been asked, about Benoit, that is, for 13 years, and I haven't said anything about it. Maybe mentioned a moment in time pertaining to wrestling, but I haven't spoke on it. I guess, Con, it's just always been this mental gag. Yeah. That I've kind of placed on myself, a mental gag order. You know, I remember when everything happened, the gag order came down, and as you fans know today, it's sort of taboo to mention or say the name Chris Benoit. So it was just something that I would never talk about. And after watching the documentary that was done by Vice TV, Dark Side of the Ring, Chris Benoit, I just feel like now the time is right, and obviously our listening audience feel the time is right as well.
Yeah, I could see that, and you having that mental gag order on you, and you being such a great talker, I can't imagine how tough it's been for you to hold that in, and now it's time to get it out. So let's talk about the documentary, the Chris Benoit documentary that was produced by Vice TV. It was the most watched documentary from their Dark Side of the Ring series, which aired in two parts. On both parts one and two, we saw footage of you and Chris Benoit together in the ring. So I feel like a question I want to ask and a question that the audience would like to know too is, did Vice TV or their producers reach out to you to be a part of the documentary at all?
Nah, man. Interestingly enough, no. Huh. I didn't. No.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I look back over everything and when I look and put things in perspective after watching the documentary, I didn't have to be on it. I don't think necessarily that I needed to be, because they had individuals whom were a part of Chris Benoit's life personally.
Yeah.
That could give, you know, a hell of a lot more info and insight into the life and times, to the mind and the thinking of one being Chris Benoit. So, you know, it was the same way after everything went down. A lot of people were being selected or asked to go do interviews. And just so you know, anybody who was doing interviews during that time representing WWE, it wasn't because the news reached out to them for these specific individuals. It was just WWE saying, hey, we want you to go and we want you to go, you go to this show and you go to that show. So, and again, they chose who they felt were the best representation just to speak on behalf of the company and also those who knew Chris Benoit personally as well as professionally.
Man, that's really insightful there, because, you know, not a lot of people would look at it like that. But for you to understand that there was people that were a little bit closer to the situation, I definitely respect that answer. So you watched the documentary. What were your thoughts on the documentary? What, when you were watching it, what were you thinking, and how was it in your eyes?
Oh, man. It was a... Excuse me. Mm-hmm. It was a roller coaster of emotion. I knew I was going to get choked up, but now I'm literally getting choked. Let me have a drink of water here.
Go ahead. Go right ahead.
But it was a roller coaster of emotion. It brought back it just opened the floodgate of memories. And it kind of put me back in the moment, if that makes sense. Like, I began to, you know, I hit you up and told you that, hey, man, I am over here shaking.
Yeah.
You know, I can't sleep. I didn't even go to sleep until 12 o'clock the next day. You know, it's just ridiculous the amount of emotions that you don't necessarily know you have stored away until you have a documentary like this that comes and open up the door, you know. And I hats off to the producers, to all those who were involved in the documentary, as I thought that The Dark Side of the Ring told a wonderful, an excellent story as much as it could possibly be told, keeping everyone's feelings in mind. Yeah. To see you know, Benoit's son, David.
Yeah, David Benoit, yeah.
To hear his story. You know, we gonna get the Popes. You know, we can talk about everybody else's story. We can talk about the best friends and all that. But to hear Chris Benoit's son's story, that hit, man.
That's heavy.
It hit me, it hit me right between the crevice of my chest. Mm. And to know what he has been through and to know what he's going to have to live through.
Yeah.
That, you know, I mean, and we're talking about somebody that looks every bit of Chris Benoit.
Spitting image.
And so he has to live his life, you know, under the unfortunate shadow, dark shadow, you know, of his dad. So I was, but on the flip side of that, con man, on the flip side of that, I was happy for him because it gave him a moment to address, to give his opinion about everything, just to release it to the public, let the world know what he's been going through. And, and which is so unfair for someone who suffered as much as he has.
Absolutely. You know,
but I'm so glad that the public has got the opportunity and the chance to see that, you know, it's a bad thing to go through life. I've, you know, my history, my background in law enforcement, when a family has to walk around and hold their head in shame because of something that one of their family members did.
Yeah.
That's unfair.
Yeah.
That's unfair. But it is unfortunate circumstances, but that's almost just the way the world is.
Yeah.
That's the whole guilty by association.
Yep.
This boy was a baby. He was in Canada. And just because he has the blood and the DNA of one Chris Benoit, he's had to suffer behind it. But nonetheless, I thought that it was a good documentary. Hearing the sister-in-law of Chris Benoit, Nancy Benoit's sister, to hear her talk and give insight on some of the things that we would have never known. Yeah. So for both of them to come out there, obviously we had already heard some of the stories from the Chavo and from the Chris Jericho, you know, but again, for them to put all that together and have it sync up the way it did. Excellent job by Vice TV, and a job well done by all those who were involved. And before we move forward, Con Man, I just want to say that because of that show, it allowed me to realize, because I saw the hurt, I saw the angst, I saw the pain. And you know what else I saw, Conman?
What else did you see?
I saw the healing process begin.
Yeah.
That's what I saw. And so after seeing that, and after everything I've had locked away, I'm not them. I wasn't as close, obviously, not by a long shot, as they were to the situation. Right. But I've hurt behind that, Conman. I've had no one. I have literally hurt behind that because I formed a relationship with the man too, which we're going to get to, but I think it's time to heal, and that's why I'm doing this special episode of the Benoit story.
No, absolutely, and that's great, because now the healing process can truly begin, like you said, and not just for them, but and now for you too, and it was a tragedy that just impacted the wrestling world in a major way. So let's talk about you and Benoit personally. When did you first meet, and what was that like?
Oh man, I think the first time that I met Chris Benoit was probably it was in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Oh, okay.
And I was training in Ohio Valley Wrestling, and we got called up. You know, a lot of times they were always bringing developmental talent anytime they're in Indianapolis or, you know, Cincinnati, Ohio, whatever part that may be. If it's in driving distance, 3-4 hours, let's go. Get on the road. We'll see you there.
Yeah.
So we were there in Cincinnati, if my memory is correct. I'm not Ric Flair, so I can't state all these dates and give you the specific time and where it was.
Right.
Good Lord. I hope to be a quarter of what he is when it comes to memory when I get his age. Right. But I remember going there to Cincinnati. We all were going back to the locker rooms, and I remember seeing Eddie Guerrero. I think I met him first.
Eddie, okay.
Yeah, Eddie Guerrero. And I wasn't going in the locker room, and there was I'm not finna cross none of these big time names. I wanna stay out of their way. And Eddie comes out, he's like, "No, Chico, what are you doing?" I'm like, I'm good. He said, "Hey, come here, man. Come here, amigo. Come here." He said to me, "Hey, we're family, we're familia, okay?" We in this together with Familia. You come on in here. So that's kind of what I, that's my Eddie Dusty impersonation. Yeah, but he hugged me.
Yeah.
You know, because I was just standing off by myself, just trying to be a good little schoolboy.
Just trying to do your own thing, yes. Trying to stay the way.
And he just made you welcome me. And Eddie, you know, Eddie Guerrero was the first to, like, welcome me in that upper echelon of superstars, if you will.
Yeah.
The other person that I ran into before I ran into Chris Benoit was Layfield.
Oh, JBL.
Hey, you know who you remind me of? I got me another Orlando. God damn. No, you don't. No, the hell you don't, JBL. I made that clear from the get-go.
Made I love it real JBL. Clear.
Yeah, and I love Orlando Jordan, but you ain't looking at another Orlando. Let's get that straight.
Mr. Pope.
And yeah, okay. So, but Chris Benoit was not as open or the word that I'm looking for is sociable.
Yeah, yeah.
As everybody else, and that's only to us, I would say, us being developmental guys, because you know Chris had that look, he had that stare. It's like, you know, and so whenever you walk past these guys or they're walking past you, you just kind of separate and you want to stick your hand out there and shake their hands.
Yeah.
As everybody should, including those of you who are listening, who are on the indie scene, stop talking about the fact that, oh, you're scared or you're intimidated or you're just trying to show respect. Anytime you got somebody in your presence that have made money in this business, and I'm not talking about, you know, headline a 200-seat
indie show. Yeah.
Talking about when you got somebody who's headline pay-per-views, who's made money in this business, who's whatever the case may be, especially these legends. You don't be respectful by not going up to them and introducing yourself and shaking your hand. That's the biggest sign of disrespect there is. You go up, you introduce yourself, and you shake their hand.
Yeah.
And for crying out loud, I know I'm going on the Pope rant, but for crying out loud, don't come up to me giving me that doggone weak handshake. Shake my hand like a doggone man.
Right.
They come up there doing that little carny shake. Listen, guys, that's over with. We shake hands. Every wrestler, entertainer, you listen to this, you shake hands like a man or a woman. All that little three-finger handshake or light handshake, it's over with. You shake my hand light, then you get in the ring with me, and you almost concuss me. So what's the difference?
Right, right. Come on, give it. You try to stiff him in the ring, stiff him with the handshake too.
Okay, but nonetheless, I'm off my rant. Let me come back out of the woods now.
Yeah.
Meeting Chris Benoit for the first time, it was just an introductory moment, and it was tense. It was scary. It was Chris Benoit. You know.
Yeah. It's Chris Benoit. I mean, yeah. I can see why it's. Would be intimidating. Just all the times I saw him in the ring, he just had that look. It looked like that's who he was. So,
exactly.
Moving right along here, any moments or stories that stand out from your time on the road together, from the time you guys spent on the road?
Well, there's the moment that really comes to mind. I think the first time, like, I got the inside gist, if you will, of Chris Benoit, seeing Chris Benoit in a way that I had never seen him, other than being in the ring,
sure.
Was a moment on a house show loop where he completely Chris Benoit was the enforcer. Okay, I'm going to come back because I want to keep my words sensitive.
Sure.
In a sensitive nature. Okay, so Chris Benoit, obviously a leader amongst leaders in the locker room, but he was not per se the locker room leader. Does that make sense?
It does.
No, he's a leader, and he's one of the top guys, but he wasn't necessarily a locker room leader. Again, in law, he was still to himself as well. You know, sit down. He was more like the enforcer.
Yeah.
What did what did the Undertaker tell you to do? You know, what did JBL say do? You know, so if somebody didn't do something that was supposed to be done, or sweeping up or picking up the trash or something like that, Chris Benoit is the guy that, okay, I got him. You know,
yeah, kind of make sure that's getting done.
Yeah, when Chris Benoit approaches you, you know, it's just, it is what it is. So, it was a time we were all traveling on ECW, SmackDown ECW road show. And, oh gosh, Miz. I love Miz to death. But back in the day, and kudos to Miz, this guy has paid his dues. He has paid his dues, and he absolutely earned everything he got up there, okay? Because there were people up there that was not giving Miz, you know, the chance. You know, I say literally that it appeared at that time that a doggone poodle had a better chance of hopping over, you know, a 6-foot fence before Miz was able, you know, to reach up and grab the brass ring.
Right.
But Miz ended up getting some Popeyes or Kentucky Fried Chicken. I'm just going to go with that. Mm. He had chicken. He had some fried chicken. Now, one of Benoit's friends, closer friends, was Armstrong, Scott Armstrong, as you may have learned from the documentary. You know, that was one of his, somebody he traveled with.
Yeah.
They stayed near each other. In the, you know, not necessarily in the right vicinity, but, you know, some hours away or whatnot. But, you know, they come up together, they travel together. So they were very close. Miz, in his ignorance at the time, he decides that, you know, he's going to eat his chicken. And we just, I mean, we had just not got there too long ago to the locker room, right. Arrived to the building.
Yeah.
Miz goes in, Miz, sits down in one of the spots, opens up his box of chicken, and he starts eating away. Here's the deal, Con Man. He's eating his chicken. And you know what happened when you eat fried chicken, right?
A lot of things happen when you eat fried chicken.
Well, when it's crispy fried chicken,
yeah,
and you're eating it, you can expect crumbs and breakage to fall off, right?
Yep.
So he got his box beside him, but he's eating over Scott Armstrong's luggage.
Ooh. His duffel.
So crumbs are just falling inside. And Miz is just oblivious to the fact that, you know, you're sitting over, you're dropping crumbs over on some, you know?
Yeah.
So Scott comes in there. Scott sees this. He grabs his bag and he looks at it. He just pulls it away from by Miz and he don't say a word. Scott Armstrong don't say a word. He just goes out. And he goes tell Chris Benoit, this mother effer is in there, you know, dropping stuff all over my... Chris Benoit comes into the locker room. He tells Miz to get out. He grabs all the Miz stuff, his luggage, and throws it out of the locker room.
Ooh.
And then points to a closet and says, that's your locker room.
Whew. Wow.
So for days, Miz... And he may have, I think he shared the story before, but Miz had to change in the closet.
Yep, I've heard that story.
He had to change in the janitor's closet whenever we got to the building. So that's one of the stories that stand out for me when we were on the road together.
Wow, that is crazy because I've heard that story so many times about the Miz and having to change in the closet. And now we have a viable answer why. And that's why. That's absolutely crazy. But the other thing that I really want to talk about here is we talked about a little road story there. But what was your relationship like, if any, with Benoit? I mean, did you guys have a personal relationship? And if so, how and when did it begin?
Well, I would say me and Benoit, we began to form a bond.
Okay, yeah.
We bonded, and that bond was growing, okay? And this all started round about WrestleMania 23.
Okay, yeah.
You know, WWE planned things months in advance, and it was already being talked about that Chris Benoit was going to switch brands and come over to the ECW brand. And Chris was wanting to know, you know, who could he go over there? Who could he elevate? So one day, and, you know, again, we never really approached Chris, but one day Chris came to me and he goes, Elijah, I want to have a word with you. And so I'm like, oh, shoot, what have I done?
You're all right, like, ooh.
You know, so he pulls me aside. We go have a seat. And actually, no, we stood. We stood to the side of the entrance of at the time of SmackDown ECW. He goes, you know, they want me to come over to the ECW brand. And I told them that I'll come over. But I want to know who can I elevate, who can I work with, who's deserving enough to be in the ring with me. And he said, undoubtedly, everybody told me you. Wow. Everybody. I went to Johnny Ace. Johnny Ace said Elijah Burke. You know, I went to this guy. He said Elijah Burke.
Yeah.
So just giving you heads up. I look forward to coming over, working with you, and we're, you know, we're going to have fun. And for me right then, that was like, that was almost if he. He had a sword and was knighting me.
Yeah.
We don't know what knighting is. That's when they take a sword and they tap you on your left shoulder, raise it over your hand, tap it on your right shoulder. That's a sign of respect. That's a sign of worthiness.
Yeah.
And at that moment, that's when our bond began. So, you know, he made it very clear. Anytime you need me, anytime you got any advice that you're seeking, you know, come to me. You know, yeah. I want to help you. I want to help you. I want to elevate you. And so that was pretty much where it all began. And I'm going to tell you where it morphed to, if you give me a second to do that.
Sure.
Our bond after WrestleMania had passed and we were heading to get ready for, you know, moving closer and closer to the draft. I found out, you know, Chris Benoit's birthday was coming up.
Yeah.
And I decided that since we were bonding and getting along and talking more than ever now, because he's about to come over soon and he's going to, you know, help me out.
Yeah, basically mentor you, yeah.
Yeah, mentor me. So, and that's what he was doing. Thank you for that. That's exactly what he started doing. He started mentoring me.
Yeah.
So I decided, shoot, I know his birthday, and that was because somehow we shared it. I don't know how it came around. I found out. So I decided when I got when I would show back up to our next event, I was going to go get him something that he really liked, and I did so because throughout our bonding process, Con Man, I found out something that almost made me say, you big dummy.
What?
You'll see where I'm going. That's okay. Because, man, I found out that Chris Benoit was a huge Sanford and Sons guy. I mean, he loved watching Red Fox.
Wait,
he loved Sanford and Sons. Yeah, man.
Chris Benoit.
So,
wow.
Yeah. So what I did at the time, they had two seasons out. I left the building, went to the store, or before getting to the building, went to the mall.
Yeah,
I think I went to like a FYE or something like that.
Yeah,
Suncoast, and I grabbed the first and second season of Sanford and Son, put it in a little gift bag, got him a nice card, and so I took it and I took it to the building, and I put it under a seat in the stands. And then I went to Chris and I found Chris. I said, hey, Chris, can we have a word? And he's like, yeah, sure, Elijah. Yeah, what's up? I was like, no, Chris, like, I need to talk to you. He's like, hey, is everything all right, Elijah? I'm like, yeah, I just want to have a seat and talk to you. He's like, sure, no problem. And he's always got like a straw or something in his mouth. He always kept like a straw in his mouth. I'm kind of looking at him right now. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So we go up into the stands And I sit down, and he goes, he sits down, and he goes, okay, what's going on, Elijah? And it was so funny because he was like so so alert, if I can use that word. Like, he just wanted, he's like, it was like, hey, what's going on? Come on, like, come on, tell me.
Yeah, he's wanting to know,
and he wanted to know what was going on. And I was like, no, I'm going to get to it. He's like, okay, just, you know, take your time. Just, you know, but I'm here, Elijah. I'm here for you. And so at that time, I said, well, Chris, I said, well, I know you probably don't like, won't like what I'm about to say, or do. Boy, it was such a cool moment.
Yeah.
And it's funny, Con, man, because I get choked up every time I talk about this or think about it. It's just, it was a cool moment. I reached under the chair.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he is looking with such concern about me.
Yeah.
And I grabbed that bag. And I don't think I've ever told this story to anybody, Con, man. I haven't shared this story with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I grabbed the bag from under the chair and I gave it to Chris Benoit. And he was like, no. And then he immediately started to cry. He immediately started to cry. And he thanked me and he was like, you didn't have to do that. And, you know, as I sit here and I think about it, he told me that he would cherish that gift.
Yeah.
Now, the reason I'm telling you that part, Con, man, is because I read the book.
Yeah.
I read the, you know, when everything happened, there was a book that came out about Chris Benoit. It was called Chris and Nancy, the true story of the Benoit murder-suicide and pro-wrestling cocktail. In that book, they have the crime scene photos. And comment in Benoit's office, on his desk, were those two Sanford and Son DVDs.
Oh, man.
And it really hit when I saw that.
Yeah, I'm sure it hit you really hard.
This will be a good time to take a break.
Okay. All right. Guys, we will be right back to Pope's Point of View.
What up, peeps? It's your boy Pope. If you are listening and enjoying Pope's Point of View with Elijah Burke, be sure to go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Springer, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts to subscribe today.
Okay, guys, we are back. Pope, are you okay over there, man?
Yeah, man, I'm good. It's just that you know, when I look back at, you know, what we were discussing, and it's just, you know, it always hits me because, like, I connected with him.
Yeah, you broke through.
Yeah, that's so. Yeah, I couldn't have said it better. That's the word I'm looking for. I broke through.
Yeah, yeah. And that's I'm sure that was a special moment for you as he was moving over from SmackDown, coming over to ECW. And on June 11th of 2007 is when it was made official that Chris Benoit will be leaving SmackDown and switching brands to ECW following WWE's draft on Raw. June 12th, the very next day, Chris Benoit is tagging with CM Punk to take on you and Marcus Corvin. Was this your first time sharing the ring with Benoit?
Actually, no. No, that wasn't my first time sharing a ring with Benoit. Oh,
okay.
The first time we shared a ring together, it was probably, you know, every time WrestleMania is done, completed, there's a overseas tour. You got to go overseas now.
Yeah.
So we were overseas, and I believe we were in New Zealand. And they did, like, this whole big ECW and SmackDown all combined in one battle royal. You know, I remember being in there and you know, getting chopped by, you know, Benoit, and getting chopped by Bob Holly. I remember I called Bob Holly over to him. I'm like, hey Bob, chop me. And Bob, like, stopped. It was almost like he, like, somebody flipped the finger at him.
Yeah,
you know, I said, chop me. He said, well, yeah. I'm like, yes. So Bob Holly, he said, okay. And he just lit me up.
Oh.
So he just lit me up. And then after about two chops, I kind of scaffolded my way up the light stands that they use out there, because we were in the open. We weren't we weren't in a building. It was like an open arena.
Yeah.
So it was a funny moment. And then, of course, I got some chops from Benoit. Let me tell you, man, Flair throws the best chops. They're the best chops for a lot of reasons, because they're just smooth. They light you up. You get the sound. But with Benoit, you got all of that times 10. So it's like, so Flair's, you know, Flair's the best, because they sting, but they feel good.
Yeah.
Benoit,
they just hurt. You
know, he had those short arms too, so like, and the density of his the muscle and the bones and all, oh man. But anyways, now so that probably was my first time. Now in this setting, it was my first time actually working a match, if you don't want to count a battle royal.
Sure.
It was indeed my first time working a match with Benoit, which, again, crazy. And there's some crazy stuff that happened during this that you guys probably don't even know that I'm going to touch on. During this matchup, if I can speak on this, myself and Marcus Corbin were going against the two top babyfaces. Okay, they just brought Chris over. Chris just lost that night before against Bobby Lashley during the draft, and then he gets drafted to ECW. So, and Bobby gets drafted to Raw. But poor Bobby. But anyways, so we have this match, man, and if anybody out there, if you're listening to this, go pull up that tag team match and just watch Benoit on that apron and see it, you know, just how intense he is. And of course, if you'll notice that, you know, soon as Benoit makes his first step inside the ring, guess who's in that ring?
Who?
I am.
You.
You know, and because, again, that's what he wanted. He wanted to specifically work with me.
Yeah.
So Marcus and CM Punk, they start, and it's going to be me and Chris Benoit. And the first thing that happens is he knocked the bejesus out of me with a chop off the ropes. And that back arm, forearm thing that he does just literally knocked the bejesus out of me. And I rolled out of the ring. I wasn't supposed to roll out, but I rolled out. If you listen, go watch. I rolled out of the ring, and he had to come out after me. I'm like, shoot, you knocked the mess out of me, man. I got to, you know, regain my bearings. But at the end of that match, the match is going to end in a DQ. But the match is in a DQ because the referee counts five. Wait, what? A referee in WWE count five? This is when they was trying to make everything legit.
Yeah.
Trying to make everything, you know. And so we do a tag in where I shot CM Punk to Marcus Corbin. Marcus turns and drops him in the corner, and Pope's going to hit the outer limits elbow. Well, the referee is counting right there at Marcus Corbin. Marcus was slow. He didn't try to hurry out the ring. And Scott Armstrong, there's that name again, whom I love.
Right.
He called for the bell. Certainly there was someone in his ear. His count was a little fast for a referee anyways, in my opinion. But someone's in his ear saying, you know, ring the bell. If they don't get out, ring the bell. And that is that was the memo of the week, I'll say, of that month, the flavor of the month. If you're not out of the ring by five, we're gonna count. The referee's going to count you. So this was the first time that I saw Benoit upset.
Oh, man.
Benoit came back, you know, in the ring. He finishes, you know, he just start suplexing me, sharpshooter, cross. I think he did everything that he wanted to do.
Yeah.
What was I going to do, you know? So it was the only time I saw him disappointed. And I'm like, hey, you know, our bad. And this is to the boys that are out there. I would never say, Marcus Corvin, you know, it was his fault. We're a team.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was our fault, you know. So and I just apologized, but he was disappointed. It was his first match on ECW.
Yeah, yeah. And like we said, he moved over to ECW, and on June 19th, the addition to ECW from Charlotte, North Carolina, a week after Benoit makes his debut in that said tag match, you two would face off in a number one contenders match for a shot at the ECW title. Looking back, were there any signs of anything different that day about Benoit? Any red flags or anything?
No, all I remember is this comment. I remember us being backstage, I'm waiting and waiting and waiting to figure out what's going to happen as we get prepared for this ECW title match or this number one contenders match.
Yeah.
I see Chris Benoit as you know, the show is on. The show is starting. And I'm looking for Chris Benoit. Chris Benoit is off by himself. He has like 4 to 5 straws, little coffee stirrers in his mouth.
Yeah.
And he is doing squats, like hundreds, just multiple squats. And I'm standing there and I won't interrupt him. And he goes, yeah, Elijah. And I'm like, hey, Chris, the show started. I just want to know what we're going to do. Do you know a heat spot? And he goes, no, Elijah. He stops. He rises up slowly. You don't do a heat spot. You can't plan that. You let the people decide the heat. And so if you watch the match, when we get out there to the ring, we have nothing called.
Oh, wow.
All I know is the finish is going to be a crossface or it's going to be a sharpshooter.
Right.
That's what I know because that's what he told me. And during that time in that ring, we go out there and he says reverse. And I reverse him. He takes the front buckle. And because of the way he sold the front buckle, workers, the people went, oh. And because the people went like that, I knew it was time for heat.
Right.
And that started our heat spot. But no, there was nothing necessarily different about Benoit except for the fact that he told me this, Elijah, be sure to talk to me out there.
Right.
Be sure to talk to me out there because I forget a lot of stuff.
Mm.
That's it.
Oh, man, that is crazy. Well, let's back up a little bit here. We talked about your match on ECW with Chris Benoit, but you also worked him that weekend prior to the showdown. Is that correct?
Yeah. We worked in Dothan, Alabama, I believe it was. And
mm-hmm.
It was the first time that I was going to actually wrestle him one-on-one. So as we talked about, I had already been in the ring with him in the tag match with Marcus Corvin against him and CM Punk. But we're in Dothan, Alabama, man, and I'm going one-on-one for the first time. And I got to tell you, man, the nerves and everything. I don't know if you can imagine. I don't expect you to, but my nerves, and it was something else, man. You know, we're talking about somebody who, number one, I was a fan of in The Horseman as I watched WCW. And as well as, you know, I was at WrestleMania 20, you know, when he won the championship. Yeah. You know, I was in OVW at that time. So I was one of, not officially the boys, but, you know, I was at the party afterwards. I was there, you know, me and JTG. My nerves was something else, but my confidence in my ability to go in the ring and do what needed to be done, that wasn't, you know, that wasn't an issue at all.
Right.
But here's the crazy part, Conman. This, now I met him being Chris Benoit, at WrestleMania 20, and at WrestleMania 20, and at other times, I had already met Woman, Nancy Sullivan.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Nancy Benoit. So I met them already, but this weekend before I faced him in North Carolina at the ECW TV show.
Yeah.
Where we fought for the title, number one contendership for the ECW title, at the house show in Dothan, Alabama, there was Chris Benoit, there was Nancy Benoit,
mm-hmm.
and there was Daniel. They were all there. Now, I need you to understand what I'm telling you. They were there at this building together.
Yeah.
And I talked to Nancy, and I hugged Nancy, and we chatted, and I'm looking at her smile right now. I'm looking at her smile.
Yeah.
Like she talked to me as if I had been one of the boys for, you know, forever. Like she. It was so cool to see her, and I talked, and we reflected on, you know, and, you know, I didn't mark out, but, you know, I was certainly, you know, you know, paying my respects and stuff. But the other thing that I remember about that day was playing with little Daniel.
Yeah.
And little Daniel was running backstage. Now, he wasn't very vocal. He didn't really say a lot. He was very shy. And I just remember him running away from me, like when I was trying to, you know, play with him and stuff.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, Nancy, like, just looking on, smiling. I remember Chris looking on, you know, smiling with his little one tooth missing. And, and then it was like, let's get to business. All right, you know, you ready? You know, let's, okay, here, you know, let me know when you get your stuff together and get dressed and meet me here or whatever. What's so crazy about that particular moment is there was nothing unusual. And everything seemed so perfect.
Yeah.
They were a happy, loving family. It's crazy.
Yeah. It sounds like from what you were saying, it just seemed like everything was as it should be, you know?
And, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy. I mean, It's just heavy to know how everything happened, but so now Vengeance, Night of Champions, the ECW title match is set. Chris Benoit scheduled to square off against CM Punk that following Sunday to determine a new champion. But as we know, Chris Benoit was MIA for the show. Could you talk to us a little about what the atmosphere was like backstage during that time?
Okay, do you remember the ECW match that, again, I keep referencing, where me and Chris battled for number one contendership?
Yeah.
Do you remember during that match when I put my knees up and Benoit crashed into him during his flying hip? Okay. Benoit told me to put my knees up. However, when I went down, he went to the opposite side of the ring. I'm thinking if you're going to put your, you want me to put my knees up, you're going to come from at least from an angle, almost in a T, as a T-bone effect, or just come from where my legs are.
Yeah.
You know, I know it's the flying headbutt. So, but he went to the top where my head was. So as I'm laying here, I'm going, holy, I mean, you got to go back and watch it.
Yeah.
I'm going, oh my God, like, how am I going to get my knees up for him to, you know, I'm not a yoga guy. I've never been a limber individual.
Right, right.
So, you know, when you're in the moment, it's just, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
And if you go watch, you're going to see me literally raise up on my upper shoulder blades to get my knees up by my head for Benoit to crash into. And so when that happened, comment, and again, like with much of the match, I went back and watched it before we did this, and I was like, wow, like we called, I didn't even know when the heat spot was going to start. Didn't know what the heat spot was, and I didn't know when he was going to stop me. When I went to do the Jeff Jarrett on the rope, where I was going to do the Pope slide, which wasn't the Pope slide at the time, he just moved. He didn't tell me. I was just working, and we were just working off of each other. So I literally almost guillotined myself on the rope, and then he started his comeback. Much like when he did the knees, man, I put my knees up. You got 240 pounds. This dude was so solid, all muscles, that crashed into me like that. And you go, well, Pope, okay, why are we saying this? Why are you talking about this? Because my back exploded. I thought my disc, my vertebrae, I thought it was crushed.
Ooh.
I thought it was on fire. It was on fire. So when when the match is over with, I get to the back, and I don't know how I made it out. I remember lifting Chris Benoit up over my head for that suplex thing, and I had to hold him there while he kneed me in the head. And I just made it through the back, through the curtains to the back, while him and CM Punk was out in the ring, and I collapsed.
Oh, no.
I collapsed, and Dusty went, come here. Get up, going over there behind those crates. I don't want nobody to see you. I don't want them to see you like this. Going over there, go get up, go lay behind those crates over there. And so that's what I did.
Yeah.
A word got to Johnny Ace about what happened in the condition I was in, and Johnny Ace was the head of talent relations at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So Johnny said, hey, good match, kid. Take the weekend off. We need you healthy. And I'm like, I'm good. He's like, no, take the weekend off. We got to keep you healthy. We got plans for you.
Right.
So I didn't make it to Night of Champions, which I may have shared before, but no doubt, you know, and I wouldn't have wanted it like this anyway. So I don't know what the atmosphere was, but I know that I was asked for during that time. Where's Elijah? Because Elijah was going to take the title and have CM Punk chase it. But Elijah was not there. And most of them didn't know Elijah Burke wasn't there, as far as creatively speaking. Again, Johnny just told me to stay home. So they had to come up with a plan. And so immediately they took John Nitro, Johnny Nitro, who was there for, you know, they always have extra talent, and they gave him that makeover right there on the spot. And he became John Morrison. And John Morrison became the champion, so the babyface can chase that babyface being CM Punk and eventually become the ECW champion. So the atmosphere backstage at Vengeance, just from what I was told, where are you? You know, where are you? Where are you? You know, and it was, you know, Chris didn't show up, so it was a lot of you know, Chris didn't show up, and that was pretty much it.
Wow, that's wild. Man, I just remember I was watching that very same pay-per-view. I was at a B-Dubs with some of my friends, and we were so confused, and when we saw John Morrison come out, and we just kind of rolled with the punches, but something felt weird. So it's crazy that that's how it went, and you had the weekend off, and everything went how it went. But moving right along here, on June 25th, 2007 episode, Monday Night Raw from Corpus Christi, Texas, they made the announcement that it came from Vince McMahon that Chris Benoit...
Hold on. Go ahead, comment. I don't even want to say it. Go ahead.
Okay. Vince McMahon, it came from him that Chris Benoit, his wife Nancy, and their son Daniel were all deceased, that the show would be dedicated to them. How did you find out that Chris Benoit and his family were deceased?
I was there. They gave me the weekend off.
Yeah.
And then they flew me in for the Monday. Now, this is... I didn't want to say this, but I guess it all kind of ties into one another. You got to remember that this show required everybody to be there, because previously on Raw, Vince McMahon got blown up.
Yes.
He got blown up.
Yes. Yep.
In the limousine.
In the limo, yep.
So we all were there. And we're, oh, man, we're going into this room. I remember I went with Ron's. Oh. I remember going in with Ron Simmons, me and Mark Henry.
Yeah.
Us black guys had to go in together to view the body.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was no body. They just had the cameras on everything. And and they had the camera over the casket. And they had a camera in the casket, I believe. And we all go in and we look down and we give our... you know, condolences or whatnot. And I remember me and Mark Henry walking out of that room and going, man, this, you know, Mark Henry said this some crazy ish.
Yeah.
Because of how real it felt. We all had to wear black. We were like we were at a funeral.
Yeah.
Literally, we were doing a mock funeral scene.
That's wild.
And then they call us out. And I remember me and JTG sitting together and talking, you know, like I told Mark, you know, everybody who knows Pope, name aside, I'm a very spiritual individual.
Yeah.
And I remember telling Mark, I said, man, I'm not comfortable. Like, I don't like... you know, I don't think you play with stuff like this.
Yeah. Oh.
TV or not. I know it's TV, but we're so far removed as far as sports entertainment is concerned. We're so far removed from just your regular TV show that is so much tied into reality, which is why it's always treated differently from a TV show. A TV show, you can blow somebody's brains out, you know, and it's just a movie or a TV show. In wrestling, you hit somebody over the head and they want to, with a... you hit somebody over the head, you know, with a 40 sledgehammer or a rubber bat, and they, you know, it's all over CNN talking about it. So, oh gosh, man. But yeah, man, I remember telling JTG, Mark Henry, this is not something you play with. And lo and behold, all of a sudden, we're all summoned to the arena.
Yeah,
and we all got to go to the seats, and we all got to sit down together. And in this certain section that they were telling us to go to. And there had already been talk about something not being right. But, yeah. You know, those of us who ain't know, we just don't know. We're not really caught up in it or anything like that. We just thinking it's just, you know, he'll get here when he get here.
Yeah.
And then the last three people to walk into the place was Chavo, if my memory is correct, Chavo Vicky, or Demon Vicky, and Vince McMahon, one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Once everybody got there, Vince McMahon walked out, stood before us, and he said, he said what everybody knows now, you know, Chris Benoit's, his wife and son are deceased. I immediately burst into tears, which was only compacted the more by the fact that Vicky let out a yelp that was from within her soul. And Chavo grabbed her and took her out immediately. And it was a hush that came over the place. A lot of people just started wailing and crying. That's kind of what I remember. Me and JTG was sitting together and just cried our eyes out. At least I did.
Yeah. So wow.
They gave us the night off. They told everybody we're gonna, you know, dedicate the show to Chris, and said if any of you wanna, you know, stay, you can stay. And if any of you, you know, want to leave, you're free to do so. At this time, you know, they even did the thing where the people were talking, giving their condolences and all that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah, that does sound crazy. And you were talking about how they had everybody give their condolences. So that night on Raw, a lot of WWE superstars appeared on camera. I mean, obviously distraught, upset, and just taken aback over the tragedy. But again, like I mentioned before on the documentary, there was no Elijah Burke. Any reason for why that was?
Just like I just said, when Vince gave everybody the opportunity to stay or go, me and JTG, we were riding, rooming together at the time, and we just left.
Yeah.
I could have stayed and possibly have been one of the guys that was on TV crying and talking about, you know, Benoit, but I didn't feel at the time, and that that was something that pertained to me more so than it did to those who knew him better.
Yeah.
You know, my relationship with Chris Benoit was, you know, 2 to 3 months. You know, other people who knew him longer, those are the people, you know, who should be talking to him, you know, talking about him, rather. And apparently not even they knew what they thought they knew. But there, you know, I always go back and I remember William Regal saying, you know, what I am willing to say. And me and William Regal had a very good relationship.
Yeah.
me and William Regal, we sat on top of a roof. I say it like that because that's how them Englishmen say it sometimes. but we sat on top of the roof of a building. I can't remember what arena we were in. And it was like he was sitting up there in a chair, you know. And I don't know if he was sunbathing or what, but he always would take time to break away. And the things he shared with me about his son and stuff, like, man, William, much respect, man, for William Regal. Love him. Love him. But when he said, all I am willing to say at this moment, it's like, man, you know, like, what did Will know, you know?
Yeah.
What did Regal know?
That's, man, heavy. I mean, that's the best way to explain it. I mean, even now at this very moment, I mean, I have goosebumps hearing everything that went on and what was going on, and Pope, within the next 24 hours, a lot of new information would come, which led to Vince appearing again to announce that due to the new information that had been received on the Benoit tragedy, Chris Benoit's name would never be mentioned again on WWE's programming from that point on. Now, you were there. What was the atmosphere like in comparison to the previous night before that?
The way that everyone was able to flip the switch. Again. Excuse me.
You're fine.
I could not imagine the news that we were hearing. And quite frankly, I was in shock. I was in shock.
Yeah.
And I would think others were too, but when you have people who you have been with for so long, within 24 hours after you were just praising this guy, and the investigation ain't even complete, and you're able to turn and hate him that quickly? Now, I'm not saying that there's no justification in hate what happened, because obviously that's horrible. But when you're in that moment and you go, wait a minute, guys, me being in law enforcement.
Yeah.
Bro, we not been to scenes.
Pope, you wanna go to break? Let's take it to break, guys. We're gonna go to break. We'll come back.
What up, peeps? It's your boy Pope. If you are listening and enjoying Pope's Point of View with Elijah Burke, be sure to go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Springer, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts to subscribe today.
Guys, welcome back to Pope's Point of View. We had to take a break there. Pope, are you okay?
Yeah, I'm good. Okay, as I was saying, and you know, again, man, I haven't talked about this in detail, in public, in 13, you know, since it happened.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of different when you're sitting, you know, one-on-one, and you got a spotlight on you, and you have to relive these moments that you don't necessarily want to relive. But I just found it so I don't know what word I'm looking for, but just to, at this time, so quickly, not even 24 hours, go from mourning and crying and being, you know, and speaking so fond of an individual. I mean, go look. The proof's in the pudding. It's all over YouTube.
Yeah.
And then within 24 hours, you know, not even 24, but we're there, and all of a sudden, you know, to hear the people, you know, some of the boys spewing venom, like, already. And I'm like, hey, like, let's, you know, to myself, I'm going, we got to wait to see how this thing play out.
Yeah.
You know, we got to know the facts. You know, we know, we hear what they're saying, but what are the facts? You right. know, we don't know that. We're only going by what's being told, you know, and it's crazy. So let's just move on.
Yeah. And it, you say that, and that brings me right into my next question. Now, you, as we all know about you, you have a history in law enforcement. So for me to say that is for me to say this. What were your thoughts about hearing the Fayetteville investigation that determined that it was a murder-suicide and that Chris was the perpetrator?
Here's what I thought. I couldn't believe it then. After everything that has happened, everything, you know, since then, I'm more susceptible to believing it than I was back then. Back then, 13 years ago, even now, I thought the investigation to something so horrific concluded way too soon.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion. I just thought it, that I felt like a small town like Fayetteville, Georgia, that got all this media attention. They got all these media giants camping out in their town. They did not want the attention. It's, you know, they're on the news all week. People are coming from outside to go by the Benoit House, fans and you name it. They're all driving through, you know, flying overhead to get aerial shots.
Yeah.
It's like, let's wrap this thing up as quickly as possible and let's move on. You know, let's get these people out of our town. So, it was rough for me because here's why. Lord help me. So, remember I told you about that back accident?
Yeah.
Where Chris Benoit came with the diving headbutt, my back exploded.
Yeah.
They sent me home. Now, according to the records and the documents, everything transpired from Friday through Sunday. I was home Tuesday. After Tuesday, I was home Wednesday. And then I was home Thursday. And then I get a call, which I missed because I was out. But I missed the call on my cell phone. I had Verizon at the time. And there was a voice message that was left. And the voice message, said, "Hey, Chris, I'm calling to check on you to see how you're doing. I hope everything is well. I'm on my way to the gym. And I'll try to hit you back up afterwards. Take care. I love you." He felt so bad. He felt so bad about that headbutt into my knees that he called me and left a voice message on my phone that I kept. I never deleted it. I kept it until I moved on from Verizon, but it stayed in my phone.
Yeah.
Like, man, Chris Benoit called to check on me. How cool is that? You know?
Yeah.
And then here's this 24-hour thing again. You're telling me within 24 hours, this man that was so concerned about me just did this.
Everything so just turned all around.
Yeah, man, it's just crazy. Like, it just blew my mind. So, I back to the investigation, being in law enforcement, and maybe everything wasn't released. You know, they talked about Nancy, rest her soul, rest Daniel. I mean, you know, it's just horrible, 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 horrible what happened. We can't stress that enough.
Yeah, yeah.
My mindset back then is, where are the DNA tests? Wait a minute, comment. What you mean by DNA? Well, they say Nancy was bound. The finding is she was bound. You know, she had some blood under her head and all that. I always ask the question, well, someone had to get to her first. And there was blood under her head, so there was a sign of struggle.
Yeah.
And so I always ask myself, well, where were, did, the first thing you do in law enforcement when you have these type of domestic situations, they check under the nails.
Yeah.
For DNA. And I always say, well, you know, I mean, because Nancy, I mean, everybody can attest to it. That was a tough, you know, that was a tough woman.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wouldn't see her going down without a fight. And so I always wondered that. And I'm going to leave that at that. I'm not making a judgment or anything. Yeah. All I'm saying is, if they have it, they never released it. I wondered, how could she be bound and choked to death, be legs tied, or a Christian wild strong man? I know that, but how can she just be bound and tied with no fight?
Right.
That's something about, that's just something I always wondered.
Yeah.
And to this day, I wondered that. What did he do? Say lay down or I'm gonna kill you.
Right. She would have gave some kind of pushback. She was trying to, you know, at that time, so, protect her life.
And listen to me. So that I could have, you know, and again, my heart, my condolences, this is no justification to anyone's listening. All I'm doing is playing, giving you a replay of where my head was, you know, and maybe even playing devil's advocate. Well, actually, I don't want to take that term, but you get what Pope's trying to say.
Yeah, definitely get it.
When you are in those type of situations, there's always more evidence, and I don't know if they wanted to release it. I've done research. I've tried to find myself, because usually you can get into that type of stuff, and I just never found it. Is it my business? No, it's not my business, but just so I can have a peace of mind of the memory of the guy that I have in my head, you know, it's just something that I tried to search out and find, and I have been unable to.
Right, and I felt like that was an important question with your history and law enforcement, and of course you being so, you know, close to the situation as it was happening, and I just felt like that your listening audience would want to hear that perspective. But back to today, 13 years later, after Vice TV's Dark Side of the Ring, where exactly do you stand now? Have your views changed? Are they the same? Where's your mindset at right now?
You know, my views and opinions really don't matter that much when it comes to that situation, because it's just so touchy, you know. And I'm already, you know, God knows we wouldn't want anything that I reflect on and share from 13 years ago to be misconstrued today. But I still after the documentary aired on Vice TV, it gave us a lot more insight to the issues and the problems, which I know that, you know, certain people knew they were having, like, you know, Dave Taylor and Dave and William Regal and Chavo, you know, they kind of knew of the personal problems that the marriage was having, and maybe even others. But after that documentary, it almost cemented it for me as far as everything that went down. But if there's a 0.1% chance of such thing of maybe it didn't happen that way, then there might be a 1% chance within me that maybe there's more to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's just because we'll never know the truth. We'll never know the facts. We'll never. All we got is what's been told to us and what's been gathered. You know, several people have shared their theories, but you know, comment. Here's a little example. Again, folks, we're talking 13 years ago.
Yeah.
But comment. Here's a little example, and then you can just move on from here.
Sure.
That they're having problems. A lot of people knows about the problems that they're having. What if the guy was tied up in something that he had no business tied up into? We all know about all the steroids that he had. As a matter of fact, he was actually pushing it to some folk. So what if when he left, he came back after everything, their barbecue that they said they were having, and Nancy was bound and on the floor and maybe expressed. This is all maybe. This is theoretically speaking, okay? And she's already bound. And then, Chris, knowing that he's involved in illegal stuff, illegal activities, don't know what to do. I don't know. I mean, but this is some of the stuff that was going through our heads at the time, trying to piece this stuff together.
Yeah.
And he don't know what to do, and he don't want to, lose his life as far as getting caught up in the legal system. Then Daniel, be without a mom and a dad. And, it's just so much that we talked about that I just don't want to touch on. But after the documentary, like I said, it pretty much sealed it for me.
Yeah,
I thought Vice TV did a great job.
Yeah, yeah. And one thing that we really talked about earlier on was when he came over to ECW, he pretty much took you under his wing, And Pope, for me to say that is for me to say this. You hold the distinction of being the last person to have ever wrestled and share the ring with Chris Benoit. I want to know, How have you handled that for the last 13 years?
It's crazy. It's like a curse, and an honor.
Yeah,
I don't know if you can separate the two in this instance, but that's just what it is. It's like a curse and an honor. Because a lot of people, who are diehard fans, that's what they remember. That's what they want to talk about, But then the fact, the honor comes in, not because he's deceased, folks. The honor was the fact that I was in there with him, period.
Yeah.
The honor was the fact that he chose me, period. That's the honor part. The curse part is that I have the distinction of being the last guy to wrestle someone who has been charged with murdering his family. Mm. That's the curse.
Yeah. Yeah. And two more questions here, Pope. Then we're going to wrap it up. The first question is the often debated topic. I mean, people go through this all the time, but we want to hear your point of view. Should Chris Benoit be put into the WWE Hall of Fame?
Knew that was coming. Yeah. Here. How about this? You got people in the Hall of Fame right now. You got people in the Hall of Fame right now that have done some atrocious things.
Yeah.
You got people in the Hall of Fame that have said things that we all know shouldn't be said. I often wonder if Jimmy Snuka had been convicted before his death, would they have erased him?
Yeah.
I often wonder that. Here, let me put it to you like this.
Sure.
If you were to pull out a bill out of your pocket right now, 9 out of 10, what would you pull out? What type of bill? As far as money concerned, what would you pull out? What's the most common one?
A one?
A dollar.
A dollar.
It's exactly. Do you know that man on that dollar was a slave owner? Do you know that man on that dollar killed many of people, let alone Negroes? And do you know he is the founding father of this country that is honored day in and day out? And I've never seen nobody black, white, yellow, or any other color say they don't want that money because George Washington is on it.
Yeah. Yep.
I've never seen someone say they don't want Andrew Jackson because he is on and the stuff that he did.
Yep.
So my point is, when you have an individual who is in an entertaining business or who is in a working field, there are two aspects of it. You got the person the personal person, then you have the business person. If you're going to honor me on my job for being employee of the month, then you are honoring my work. You're not honoring, you know, the fact that I'm banging, you know, two hookers every night when I get home from work.
Yeah, yep.
You're not honoring that guy. You're not honoring that guy who leaves from work and goes smoke dope or snort cocaine. You're not honoring that guy. You're honoring the guy who came to work and produced for you. Now, with that being said, for everything that Chris Benoit did as an entertainer, for the great tactician that he was, for the excellent worker that he was, all that is overshadowed and will always be overshadowed because of what happened. And so therefore he'll never be in the Hall of Fame.
I agree with that. I don't think that he will be, but I also understand your point as far as differentiating the performer and the man himself. And finally, the last question, Pope, if you're explaining to me for the first time who Chris Benoit was as a person and an entertainer, what would you tell me?
If I was explaining to you who Chris Benoit was for the first time, I'll say that Chris Benoit was one of the greatest wrestlers to have ever stepped inside of the square circle since the invention of wrestling. That's what I'll say about Chris Benoit as the entertainer. Yeah. As a person, I'll say that Chris Benoit was a no-nonsense individual who was soft-hearted, kind once you broke through the outer layer.
Yeah.
And who took so much damage over the years to his brain for the sport that he loved that it eventually consumed him and caused him to do the unthinkable, which is unforgivable. And that's what I'll say about Chris Benoit, the person.
Wow. Pope, I personally want to thank you so much for doing this very special episode of Pope's Point of View. I know your listening audience will enjoy your insight and views shared. But for me personally, as a fan of you, as a fan of Chris Benoit, I mean, absolute goosebumps and hearing your insight and how you've kept it close to your chest all these years and you finally felt comfortable enough to let it out and to me of all people and of course our listening audience, but for me to be on the other side of this man is just a complete honor. So Pope, thank you again.
All right, man. Thank you.
No problem. No problem at all. Ladies and gentlemen, this will conclude our episode of Pope's Point of View, the Chris Benoit story. Next week, we'll return to our normal show format. Be sure to hit Pope up on social media. Give him feedback. Like us on all podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, such as others. And as Pope always says, until next time, take care of yourself. Take care of each other. And always remember, if you can't change the people around you, then change the people around you. People around you. People around you.